Last weekend was International Women's Day, and the Irish naval vessel, the Elie Niamh, under Lieutenant Commander Claire Murphy, was in Galway to mark the occasion. The Irish Defence Forces and the Navy have been attempting to recruit more women in recent years, but the uptake has been very low. Lorna Siggins runs to Galway to meet the Elie Niamh and her commander.
It's almost 12 years since Navy Lieutenant Commander Roberta O'Brien brought traffic to a halt in Galway when she was piped on board the Elie Ashling, the first woman to take command of an Irish naval patrol ship. Earlier this month, another female Navy ship's captain, Lieutenant Commander Claire Murphy, berthed the Elie Niamh in Galway docks for International Women's Day. A Galway 2020 outdoor sunrise performance by French-Norwegian poet and sound artist Caroline Bergvall, along with soprano Anna Beard Fernandez and composer Gavin Bryars, was due to be held on the ship's deck. However, near gale force southwesterly winds dictated a change of venue to the Druid Theatre near the docks. Galway 2020 had just taken the decision to relocate the Ragadon performance from ship to shore when I spoke to Lieutenant Commander Claire Murphy on board the Elie Niamh.
So the Ragadon event was supposed to be held on board tomorrow morning with regards to International Women's Day and also the Galway Capital of Culture 2020. Unfortunately, due to the weather conditions, it will not now be held, which is, we're all bitterly disappointed on board because such a unique and interesting experience at sunrise would have been really beneficial for the ship's company to see and enjoy, and obviously members of the public coming on board as well. It would have been a lovely event, and it's just unfortunate that the weather conditions precluded the same.
And tell me about your career in the Navy.
When I left school, I went to Cork Institute of Technology and studied nautical science. That was before the Maritime College was built. I then got a job working for the Danish shipping company Maersk, so I was an officer of the watch with them. And then I discovered that the Naval Service were looking for direct entry officers, and at the time I was in the Naval Service Reserve, so I knew what I was going to let myself in for, so I applied, and here I am.
And you have had a long association with the Roisin.
I have. My first trip with the Reserve was out on Roisin. I really, really enjoyed it. When I came in as a direct entry officer, my first posting as a commissioned officer was the navigation officer on Roisin back in September 2004. And then my first command was Roisin in October 2017. So I have a long history with Roisin, and she's a fabulous ship.
And what is it like, you know, where this is International Women's Day, the number of women in the Navy is still not enormous?
I think being anyone on a ship is difficult. It's not a job, regardless of gender. It's not a job for everyone. Yeah, you're certainly outnumbered on board. Currently, I have a crew of 39. I'm one of four women. So that's less than 10%, or just about 10%. I really enjoy it. When I was working for Maersk, again, I was maybe the only female on the ship. I'm very used to it. A lot of people wouldn't enjoy it. I do. It's a job that I thoroughly enjoy. But yeah, I don't mind it at all. What I really love is no 2 days are the same. I get up in the morning and you don't know what's coming your way. As ship's OC, I'll make plans as to what I want to do that day. By 10 o'clock, they could be thrown out the window. You could be responding to a search and rescue. You could be doing anything. So that's what I really love about the job. No 2 days are the same.
And just, it's a more family friendly now with the 4 week patrols.
Absolutely. So when I first joined, the patrols were kind of three and a half weeks with about a week to 12 days in. Now we've gone into a 6 week cycle, so 4 week patrol with 2 weeks alongside. Now, a lot of people seem to think that the 2 weeks alongside, you're off gallivanting, doing your own thing, but you're prepping the ship, getting ready to go back out for the next patrol. But you also get a bit of downtime as well. So I do think it's very important in the current climate to strike a good work-life balance for people so that they work, but then they have sufficient downtime to be with their families and friends.
Oh, matter of Hans blue skull, wide-eyed party constellations, liquid lips, ghost spines, lucid dust heat. matter.
So you obviously have many memorable patrols.
Oh, absolutely. Over the years, we've, as I've said to you, no 2 days are the same, so no two patrols are the same. One of the highlights, I've numerous highlights, but one of my early highlights that really made me so joyous that I joined the organisation was in 2005 on Roisin. We went across to New York for Paddy's Day, and the ship's company marched in the Paddy's Day parade through New York, which I don't think I'll ever forget that. That was absolutely fantastic. And then obviously my first patrol in command on the Roisin again. I was sweating buckets, I must say, on the start of that, because the training wheels have come off. It's on you. There's nobody to help you, or every decision is mine to make. So you're constantly, at the time, I was constantly second guessing myself. Is this the right decision? Is this the right call? But after a while, you tend to relax a little bit and enjoy it a lot more, because ultimately, command of a ship is something that I've wanted since I joined. It's something I think every officer should aspire to, and does aspire to. So when you get it, then it's really special. It's really, really special. So another interesting one was on this unit, the Ellie Neave. We were providing security last year for the visit of President Trump to Doonbeg. So we were situated in Domore Bay, providing security from the seaside. And that was really good and exciting, and something different for the ship's company. A lot of them are very young, wouldn't have seen it before. So to see the helicopters coming and going, they just loved it. The ship's company loved it. We were on Sky News and we were on RT News, which is a great buzz for them, because they thought it was really cool. But yeah, it was a little bit rolly, all right. It wasn't the best place to anchor.
But you had no choice.
No, we had to provide security, but it was absolutely fantastic, and the ship's company thoroughly enjoyed it, because, as I said, something completely different out of the blue that you're not going to do every day.
Lorna Siggins with Lieutenant Commander Claire Murphy on the Ellie Neave in Galway. We had been planning to bring tonight's programme from the Skipper Show in Limerick, but that's been postponed because of the coronavirus. The Skipper Show is the biggest expo for commercial fishermen in the country, but an early call was made to put it off last weekend. Turns out it was the right thing to do. The organisers are now hoping to hold it later in the year and give all those large commercial companies we have working in that sector a chance to show off their wares. But it does give me an opportunity to bring to you some more of the people I met at the recent Angling Expo in Dublin. One company I met there was Conway Angling Craft, a very new boat supplier. Michael Conway told me about his company.
I started the company myself because I felt there was a big market in Ireland that was missing kind of aluminium boats. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year. They're nice and light, they're very durable, they last for a long time. And then also on the back of that, we brought in a lot of other products, mostly American, because American brands seem to be at the cutting edge of technology at the moment.
Where are you based?
I'm based in Clonskee in Dublin.
Let's have a look at this one here. It's a spectacular looking craft.
Thanks. Yeah, this is a Lund boat, so it's a riveted American boat.
It's aluminium.
Aluminium boat, yeah. Riveted versus welded, there's two main types. This comes in from a company from Holland that brings them over. Comes with a Mercury engine, fish finders, electronics. We supply everything with the boat itself, but it's a lovely boat.
It's about, what, 15, 18 feet?
Yeah, it's 16 foot, 25 inches. So it's a nice big boat. It's got a 60 horsepower on the back of it. So any type of lake, any weather, you can be anywhere. Top speed of about 57 kilometres an hour.
It's about as far from your traditional fly fishing boat as you can get.
Yeah, it's probably a lot more comfort, I'd say, would be nice. But it's very wide. It's nearly 2 metres wide. So you have a lot of comfort for casting, for moving around the boat. It doesn't move around that. And the draft on the boat is very light as well, because it's aluminium. It weighs less than about 400 kilos.
Okay, so would I use this on sea or on a lake?
Predominantly it would be lake fishing. You can use them on the sea, but they would be designed predominantly for the Great Lakes, so stuff that would be bigger than the Irish Sea. So they could go on sea, but it would salt water and aluminium is not a very good combination.
Okay, in the
long term, you'd have to wash it down, make sure you look after it.
Yeah. What kind of price am I talking for something like this?
This particular model starts at about 28.5. Now that would be for the boat, 40 horsepower engine and a Pega trailer.
Yeah, I figure the engine's half the price, is it?
Exactly, yeah. Well, my plan would be to get an electric version of it, which I would love.
Yeah.
So there's an 80 horsepower electric you can get with lithium ion batteries, which is really good, very interesting.
Well, you have a smaller version here.
Yeah, the smaller version is a new company that we started work with this year called Tangiri. Again, different to the Lund because it's a welded boat versus a riveted boat. So riveted boat would be something like you see on an airplane, and a welded boat would be slightly heavier and slightly more durable if you hit rock strikes, because obviously a thicker boat. But it's a Polish brand, so they're a European brand. So it's a really nice boat that's very popular in Ireland again as well.
Much smaller boat, so easy to tow. What size is that?
That particular boat there is a 4 metre, so they come in 4.1, 4.3, 4.6 and 5.1 metre as well. So they have a big variety to cater for everyone.
How much is that going to set me back? And what kind of an engine size are I needed on that?
Yeah, well, the 4 metre itself can take a maximum of about 30, but we'd recommend the 20. With two people and fishing all the gear, it can get up to about 37 kilometres an hour. So that's what I would recommend. But you could go with a 30, but it would be very fast, that's it.
How much for that one?
That one starts at 7,000 euros.
So it's about the same price as a wooden boat, fly fishing boat?
Yeah, and because it's welded and it's all metal, it's all aluminium, there's no maintenance on it. So you don't need to do anything to it. There's no need to varnish it, there's no need to lay it up, there's no need to gel coat it, wax it, anything. And it's really simple and easy. What most people want, most people try and get, you know, if they're lucky if they get out for one day fishing every 2 weeks and they just want something that looks after itself.
If we want to contact you, where do we find you?
I suppose at the moment the big thing is my website. It's Conway Angling Craft.
And thanks to Michael Conway. You'll find his company, as he said, on conwayanglingcraft.ie. It's all one word, and he's also there on Facebook. Also, at the Angling Expo, I met people from the Dublin Angling Initiative. It's run by Inland Fisheries and it's been going for many years. They visit schools, they bring kids fishing, and it's a really terrific initiative. I met them there.
So my name is Rory Keating and I run something called the Dublin Angling Initiative, which is part of Inland Fisheries Ireland. We aim to introduce fishing to youngsters from the greater Dublin area. Hopefully those kids that might not have had a chance before to learn a bit about fishing and to try it out for the first time.
You go around schools. What do you do in the schools?
We do two sorts. We go to schools and we'll show the kids a bit about the rivers and the ecology and the nature side of things. And then we'll also introduce them to the world of fishing and the connection between the two. So we're very concerned that you need to know a bit about the environment that you're in when you're going out and fishing and spending time in it and sort of matching up the two. So we do an educational side of things where we go into schools and we'll tell the kids about what they expect to find in the rivers, and then we'll actually bring kids out fishing as well. So we have two sides to the initiative.
You have a display here. We're watching a kid. It's just like a PlayStation and a TV screen. What's going on there?
So this is our fishing simulator, which is a great way of showing young people what catching and hooking into and catching and playing a fish is actually like. And it's brilliant crack. Yeah, you get quite a shock when you hook into something. You mightn't realise quite how powerful a fish can be.
You've got a rod in your hand, it's going into this little box, and the box is linked to a screen which is showing the fish fighting and the rod is pulling out of your hand.
That's it, exactly. And so when the fish takes, the computer decides to pull in the line off the rod, and you get quite a shock when it takes for the first time. It's always good. A little bit of crack.
How long has the Angling Initiative been going?
Would you believe? I think it's 25 years this year. I'm only the latest in line of people who've had the privilege to work with the initiative. So 25 years this year, and hopefully long may it continue.
Yeah, it's funded by the IFI.
It is indeed, yeah. It's an IFI initiative, and we're starting to roll out a whole series of education outreach initiatives around the country. We have a new education outreach team who are trying to introduce youngsters right around Ireland to fishing and the world, the environment that the fish are in.
If I'm a teacher in a school, how do I invite you to come along to my students?
The best thing to do is to contact me. My name and address and contact details are all on the Inland Fisheries website. You'll find a Dublin Angling Initiative section on the IFI website. And email me, ring me, and I'll be delighted to come and meet you and introduce youngsters to the world of fishing.
And that's the Dublin Angling Initiative. As I said, you find it on the IFI website. Later that same day, I was at the Irish Specimen Fish Awards. Lots of anglers from all over the country were getting certificates for record fish. And one of the people I met there was a charter skipper from West Cork. He told me how he and his clients catch the big ones.
Hi, my name is Tom Collins, Sea Angling Charters based in Union Hall, West Cork.
You've got, with your son here, a couple of specimen certificates this year. What are they for?
Yeah, my two sons got specimen skate, common skate. Evan, that's 10, he got two specimen skate this year.
They were bigger than himself, 194 centimetres.
194 centimetres and 210 centimetres. And he also managed a very special catch of a 1.06 kilo megrim, which is a very special specimen to get this year.
What's a megrim?
A megrim is a type of flatfish, but it's generally caught in deeper water, 100 plus metres of water. And they're rare enough to catch a specimen size on these days due to commercial fishing, etc.
Your charter boat is out of where in West Cork?
It's Union Hall, so we're based in Rean Pier in Union Hall, and that's West Cork, yeah, just beyond Clonakilty.
You specialise, you've been telling me, in skate. How did you get into that? How did you find out the fish were there?
Well, we've known the common skate were there for many years, and without the use of social media, it wasn't really promoted very well. So about 4 or 5 years ago, I had customers telling me they had to go to Northern Ireland or Clew Bay to catch big skate. So we set out to document that Union Hall is actually, in fact, one of the prime locations in Europe for common skate. So we utilised the Irish specimen fish book to document our catches.
So, yeah, because you can use this book, look up common skate, where and when they were caught, and that gives you an awful lot of information.
It does indeed, yes, and the specimen fish book is distributed all over Europe, and the Dutch anglers in particular love the Irish specimen fish and the bigger fish like the shark and the common skate. So, as I say, for this year we've 17 specimens documented in the book for a common skate.
How do you go about catching a common skate? They're very large fish. How big are they? And they're right on the bottom.
Correct. They live on the bottom. We've had them from 20 pounds up to about 230 pounds. The majority last year were bigger fish over 130 pounds, with the biggest fish weighing in at about 210 pounds.
What kind of methods are you using for catching those fish? Are you at anchor or are you drifting or what?
So we fish at anchor. We fish. We tend to fish heavier gear than some people. We fish 50-pound class gear. The traditional baits would be mackerel, but this year we've experimented, probably due to my son experimenting, and we found that ling, in fact, is one of the better baits down our way for common skate. 75% of our customers travel from abroad, 25% would be Dutch, 50% would be from the UK, and then the remaining 25% would be hardcore base from Ireland that they tend to like to target the bigger fish.
What's your season going to be from this year?
We're kicking off next weekend, just towards the end of February. We skate fish all year round. Our shark season starts at the start of June and goes right through till the end of October. We'll be reapplying this year again for the tuna license. And this year the season's extended from the start of July to right through till the 12th of November. So that's extended our season with the tuna this year.
How do we contact you? Do you have a website?
www.seaanglingcharters.ie.
And thanks to Tom Collins. Over the last few weeks, we've been hearing some stories from Captain Brendan Ford. He spent over 50 years at sea as an officer on various merchant ships. He first went to sea in 1947 and has been around the world several times. Tonight, he has a story about a French Foreign Legionnaire.
An encounter with the French Foreign Legion. Reading in the newspaper recently about the concerns of a new commanding officer in the French Foreign Legion, that today there are few recruits to the Legion who speak French, and that there is a shortage of actual French recruits to give a French feel to the force, reminded me of an incident in my seagoing days. I was employed at the time by Irish Shipping and had been appointed a second mate of the Irish Willow for a voyage to Mediterranean ports, beginning with ports in France and Spain and going on to Castellammare di Stabia, a small town and port in the Bay of Naples. We had various cargoes on board, including old tram tracks from Dublin. We sailed outwards on the 22nd of November 1961 and arrived in Italy just before New Year 1962. I remember being surprised to find that such a lovely town, tropical looking to us seafarers, with its palm trees, was so cold, so bitterly cold, even in sunshine. We had a few days there, and I managed to get in a trip to see the ruins at Pompeii near Vesuvius. Locals explained that the cold was due to northeast winds coming down from the mountains. Even wolves were said to have come down into the towns to get food. We even also saw young women tourists queuing in summer frocks, in tears, waiting to get repatriated home to the UK, their holidays cut short. Local food and hospitality were much appreciated by us, and after a pleasant stay of a few days, we sailed for Dublin. Our homeward route took us along the North African coast, where Algerian France was everyday news, as the local French colonists resisted the move by France to grant independence to the Algerian people. During our earlier visits to France, Spain and Italy, all the crew had availed of bargains in wine, quantities of cheap wine that came in large wicker-covered bottles. There is always the danger of a bargain going wrong, but we had taken an odd swig from the bottles and all seemed well. I had a few large bottles standing in the corner of my cabin, well secured against the rolling of the ship. In January 1962, somewhere off the north coast of Algeria, I was supposed to go on watch, but was suddenly taken very ill. Captain Tyrrell was very concerned about my health, and we proceeded into Algiers to get medical attention. I don't know why we actually went in and alongside the dock instead of going to anchor outside and getting medical help out to us, as sometimes would be the practice. I was unconscious and not aware of what was going on, but when I was revived and found a uniformed officer attending to me, he was a Foreign Legion medical man of some sort. I don't know if he was a qualified medical doctor or not, but I will call him doctor here for convenience. He took blood and blood pressure and reduced vomit, which he closely examined. Our conversation was in English, as I had no French. He had Legionnaire support with him, about six men on board. While he was working on me, we could hear in the background, in Algiers, small arms fire, no artillery. Two of his men, heavily armed, remained with him all the time he examined me. I'm fairly certain the doctor spoke to the two men in German. This was no real surprise because after World War II, a fair number of Rommel's Afrika Korps men, released as prisoners of war, remained on in North Africa, settled down and joined the French Foreign Legion. I was uneasy when the doctor began to examine and taste my supply of wine, and was horrified when he began to empty the contents down the sink of my wash basin. "Where are you pouring away my wine?" I asked. He responded sharply, "Even my legionnaires would not drink such stuff. It would kill you." We sailed for home an hour or two later, with my cure delivered on board, several large bottles of Vichy water. Outside the harbour, a patrol boat came out after us, and a boarding party arrived on deck, began searching the ship. Two German-speaking legionnaires who had stowed away on our ship were found and taken back to Algiers. I don't want to think about what might have happened to them.
And that was Captain Brendan Ford, who is now living happily in retirement in Dublin. And just a word that every event we've had notice of for Seascapes over the next couple of weeks has been cancelled. But we'll keep you informed.